Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
I'm delighted to say Kenny Cunningham is with us. Kenny, how are you getting on?
Yeah, all good, lads.
We've been wallowing in the history of Irish football, essentially, over the last 2 days. Obviously, great sadness, but, you know, also a chance for us to celebrate the incredible impact that Jack Charlton had on football and on our culture. What's it been like for you?
Yeah, probably a slightly different experience. As you know, lads, I'm based over in the UK, so I was interested to see exactly how it would be covered back home, but it wouldn't surprise me. It's there's been so much talk, so much conversation, and so much nostalgia, I suppose, probably the best word, surrounding Jack's passing for understandable reasons. And I suppose things like this just do take you back, but it's such a long time ago, lads, in 1990. I mean, I just left for England. I was 8. I just left school in 89. Just made my way over to England. That was my first year. So I was heading back to Dublin on my first summer holidays in 1990, and all that kind of madness started when we qualified with World Cups and European Championships. So,
had you made your debut at the end of that first season? Had you made your debut? You're at Millwall, is that right? Or are you at Wimbledon? Millwall?
I was at Millwall, that's right. It was before 89, 90. 18 I would have been. So I was over there for a year and the season would have finished and I would have been in me car and trundling back to Dublin for me summer holidays. That would have been 1990, Italia 1990. So, yeah, same as everybody else, amazing memories from back then for that period. And, of course, when I was lucky enough to break into the international fold, as an under 21, Jack would still have been in place, would have been manager of the senior international squad. But I wouldn't have had that relationship with Jack that the kind of previous generation, the lads you've mentioned there, Cass and Ray Houghton, you know, Ronnie, all of these people, that was kind of Jack's team, obviously, you know what I mean? And from a distance, Jack was, it's interesting to hear the kind of the personal anecdotes about Jack, because I just would have known Jack from a distance, would have peered around the corner and kind of observed him, because he was a little bit kind of fearsome from a distance.
Yeah.
If you hadn't got that kind of relationship, as those other lads did, and got to know him and got to know the person, you know, inside that kind of hard exterior a little bit, you know, if you're a little bit further removed from him, he was a little bit kind of a fearsome character. So I never remember having a conversation with him, and in all honesty, I probably kept my distance. Those couple of games I played under 21, you would have shared the same hotel, lads, with the senior international team. You would have been around each other a little bit. You would have seen the different staff members. But Jack would have been, Jack kind of dominated the room to a large extent. And there probably would have been an occasional nod and a wink, maybe, as I kind of scurried past him in a hotel lobby. I probably wouldn't have even made eye contact with him. So I was kind of interested in all the personal anecdotes about Jack as the person, more so. I mean, I'm pretty much aware of what he achieved as a manager, although I wasn't aware actually how relatively successful he'd been as a manager in club football, lads, in terms of a promotion with Middlesbrough and Sheffield Wednesday prior to him taking the Irish manager's job. So, yeah, I think the personal anecdotes are the ones that kind of really kind of register and actually really matter at the end of the day, lads. I mean, it's great professionally. He had a wonderful career. But I would think what matters really to his nearest and dearest are the kind of personal stories that are coming out from people, and people kind of sharing the stories of Jack and their perceptions of him as a man. Ultimately, that's what really matters. And it was he had a great life, and one which should be celebrated, and which has been done over the past couple of days, and will continue to be so, I'm sure.
It's an unbelievable life when you think about somebody who rejects going down the pits at 15 and dreams of something better, and then goes and wins a World Cup and goes and brings another country's team to the quarterfinals of the World Cup for the first time that they've ever qualified in the tournament. Like, it's an absolutely you could write it and people would go, that's a bit Forrest Gump, that's not real. Gary Breen was on the show yesterday and he was around the team as an under 21 as well. And he was saying that during training sessions, Jack would kind of be over in the other pitch and he'd be playing and he'd have one eye on the ball and one eye on training and the other eye would be on Jack to kind of just make sure, is he looking, what's going on, is it, that's Jack Charlton over there. That was the kind of the imposing figure that he was. Were you conscious of his presence around the training ground when you were training with the under 21s?
I probably don't remember him so much around the on the training pitch, lot, honestly. I think those situations would have been maybe few and far between when we were kind of maybe training side by side. I'm sure he took the opportunity on occasion to come outside and probably watch us from a distance. And I think when the international manager came and stood on the side of the pitch, whether it was a game or training or whatever, the intensity level almost went up 10-20%. To be honest with you, lads, I was never one for, like, I've got to impress Jack, because I don't think the type of player I was never going to impress Jack, in all honesty, at centre-half. If Jack had extended the job for another 10 years, God rest him, there would have been no international captain in my way. He had a certain template in terms of what he wanted from the centre-half, and I didn't fit into that, which I understood then and I can understand now. If you think the players who played underneath him there, Mick in particular as captain, probably epitomised everything he was looking for.
You're about 6 inches too small, Kenny.
too small, too timid. Just, it was all wrong. Everything was wrong, Jerry, in terms of my kind of physical makeup. I couldn't kick the ball more than 20 yards. Like, I hadn't got the muscle definition to kick the ball over the halfway line. So, yeah, so, you know, that's the way it was. But he was, what pressed me from a footballing perspective, looking back now, was in terms of how strong he was as a personality, in terms of coming into that dressing, that Irish dressing room, and demanding that we play the way that we did. Because it would have been a lot easier, lads, if he'd come into a dressing room with a team which was maybe from a, in terms of the individual ability of those players at a low level. You know, basically, if you come into a bit of a park team, you know what I mean, a team which is maybe struggling, the individual quality wasn't there from a footballing perspective, very easy to impose that style of play on that kind of dressing room. People kind of buy into it, you know. But the dressing room he went into, the quality of footballer we had in that dressing room, really, it's unparalleled. We've never experienced this since. The footballers we had, Ray, Ronnie, I could go on, even John Sheridan, players like that, in kind of centre midfield, Liam when he first came into the team, absolutely world class football players. And he had to go in there and just, and he had to win these players over, and not win them over, he actually told them, didn't he, this is how I'm going to play, this is how I envisage it, this is how we'll be successful playing this way, and you've got to get on board, and if you don't, you're kind of out the door. So that takes a kind of a huge personality to walk in the dressing room we had at that particular time and pretty much demand it of those players and have the confidence in yourself and how you want to play just to stick to that path. So looking back, that's what impresses me most as a you look at your coaching head now, you're old, you're a little bit wiser, looking at in terms of how he handled that kind of dressing room and how he kind of, what he demanded of the players. That was kind of pretty unique. So that's hugely impressive, kind of from looking back from a footballing perspective in terms of what he did.
Were you a big fan of the team, Kenny? Would you be making appointments during the tournaments to plan your whole day around watching these games?
Yeah, because it's interesting because I experienced a little bit 2004 and 2008, because I would have been over in the UK, and it's interesting, like, in terms of perceptions of the Ireland team, lads, from over in the UK. Clearly, back home, everybody was in, like, you know what I mean? It was a bit of a pile-on in terms of the emotions back home. Everybody was absolutely loving it. But I remember there was a huge groundswell of good feeling towards the Irish national team over in the UK. Not to say that hadn't been the case, but, and I think Jack was clearly a part of that. So I remember kind of the lead up to between 92 and 94, particularly 94, lads, because I don't think England qualified for the World Cup, did they, in America. And I remember countless occasions, kind of people, where would I have been then? I might have been at Wimbledon then at that stage, but the amount of people coming and saying, oh, it's, you know, best of luck this summer. We'll be behind the Ireland team and we hope you do well. It's great what's kind of happening over there. And there was a huge groundswell of that amongst the kind of English people. That's what I experienced anyway. And that was like, wow, this is amazing. That's fantastic. And I think he was part of that, Jack, not just the fact that he brought that kind of success and we qualified for those major tournaments, but because of kind of the man himself, how he was perceived. He was clearly very, very well liked and respected for the reasons that we're all finding out this week in terms of how he carried himself, no airs and graces, what you saw, what you got straight down the middle, that bit of honesty and integrity that came with him. I think people respected that and actually had a lot of good feeling towards Jack. So that kind of all came together in terms of the perception of the Irish national football team over in the UK and in England. So there was a huge groundswell of kind of, you know, good feeling around that and kind of best wishes. And, you know, we hope the Ireland team, it's great what you're doing over there. Best of luck. There was a lot of that around, lads, and probably still around to a large extent today. And he probably maybe started that, I think, Jack himself.
I think, obviously, because he's a World Cup winner, there is going to be interest in how he does. There weren't that many Englishmen managing outside of England at that stage. Can't think of any off the top of my head who kind of were managing. Maybe Roy Hodgson would have been in club football at that stage, probably somewhere in Sweden or somewhere, maybe not even. What's the coverage been like over the last 24, 48 hours? Has it just been about the fact that he's been a World Cup winner? Has his managerial career got a look in? Because I haven't seen any of the BBC or ITV coverage.
Yeah, there has been a little bit. Like I said, maybe I had known, I'd just forgotten about it, to be honest with you, because you think of Jackie, you just think, well, yeah, that's all he did. He woke up one day and thought, well, I'm going to manage Ireland, and that was it. But he hadn't, of course. He kind of served in his apprenticeship to an extent, didn't he? Graham Souness spoke about coming in the door at Middlesbrough. Souness was a young player at the football club, and he actually gave him credit for turning his career around. Souness intimated that he was a bit of a big head, big ego at that time, thought he was the bee's knees, and you know, Souness was going to do it his way, and very quickly Jack sat him down and explained to him the kind of direction one of the two directions that he could take in terms of going to make a success for himself and the opposite route which was available to him, but put it in very kind of stark terms. And Souness was very appreciative of that. He said it kind of got him on the right road again. So he spoke very warmly about Charlton. And that's important, I think. And I think that's something that's forgotten in the modern game in terms of just basic man management, you know, how to deal with people on a human level. Now, we talk about managers these days and, you know, a lot of them are kind of coaches. And we talk about in terms of, like, you know, their kind of ethos and their philosophy here, a lot of these kind of buzzwords around managers. But the basic principles are still the same in terms of the success of how you manage successfully now as opposed to maybe 30 years ago. When Jack was around, and the basic pillar, I think, of that is how you treat players, how you manage your players, your interaction between your players, that kind of dynamic, that bond between you and your players, for me, is still huge in determining how successful you're going to be as a group together. And I think Jack kind of forged that and understood that very quickly in his managerial career, which is why you're hearing players speak so fondly of him, whether it's at club level like Souness, at Middlesbrough, or the players within the Irish international fold, you know, top class, world class players, who maybe some, I'd say maybe, if they asked them honestly, had real issues in terms of how they've been asked to play under Jack, but ultimately came to respect it in terms of what he was asked them to do. But as the person himself, in terms of how they were treated by Jack, how they kind of viewed Jack as a person, as a character, I think it's pretty kind of consistent in terms of how they all viewed him.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point because John Giles was on, obviously, immediately on Saturday, and he was saying that they would have had significant disagreements with each other about how the game should be played, but that they were always friends, that they always respected each other, that they always managed to get over whatever their differences were about that. And even later on in his career when he had to criticise him, Jack never held it against him because They had some mutual respect at a human level that was more important to them than a disagreement about whether or not the ball should go from back to front quickly or if Giles should be able to come and get it off him when they were playing. And I think that rings true. I'm sure Ronnie Whelan didn't think that the best thing to do was for him to be running on to knockdowns. It should have been, look, I'm from Liverpool. We're the best footballing team in the world at the moment. Give me the ball because I'm going to be able to control this game. So I think you're dead right about that. Kenny, we did want to talk to you about the situation in the Premier League and what happened with Man United last night. There are going to be setbacks. There are going to be forks in the road for Solskjaer. This is how he deals with it that will define whether or not he actually ends up being a really good Manchester United manager.
Yeah, but I heard a little bit of his comment after the game last night. I thought he dealt with it well. There was no need. Last night wasn't the time for throwing your hands in the air and saying, oh, we've missed a massive opportunity here. Oh, I can't believe I'm devastated. The players, oh, I'm so frustrated. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I think what I heard him speak after the game was the case. Well, look, no, we weren't at our best. Credit to Southampton. They thought they played fantastically well. But, you know, we take a point and we kind of move on. I think that was the right tone to strike. They weren't at their best last night. I mean, it's a disappointment these days, isn't it? I was looking forward to the game last night. Funny enough, I was speaking to somebody earlier today, yesterday, and he was saying, cool, I can't need to organise myself. United are playing this evening. And of late, there's been that kind of bit of a buzz, isn't there, around Manchester United. You don't even have to be a diehard Manchester United supporter, I don't think, to think, oh, United are playing tonight, just because of how well they've been playing. You know what I mean? That kind of bit of mojo is back around the football club, predominantly around the kind of front five. So, yeah, there was a little bit of a drop-off last night. Probably had enough chances to win the game, lads, in all honesty. Martial, who played very well, I thought had a couple of great chances. But I thought Southampton deserved their point. But I don't think it's going to be kind of fatal, the kind of points dropped last night, lads. I think if you look at their run-in, Crystal Palace away, West Ham at home, before they go to Leicester away last game of the season, it's still, for me, very much in their own hands, lads. So if I was coming into the dressing room this morning, Sol's got to be bouncing in that dressing room, big smiles, and you know, lifting the lads up and saying, lads, we go again. We're in a great position here. It's exactly where we want to be, three games of the season left. Let's kind of pick ourselves up and plow on and go and do it.
It could be an absolutely unbelievable occasion at the end of the season against Leicester if they both managed to keep pace until then. Like, just a couple of things that stuck out from last night. I mean, like, the front three look good, especially Martial. It's easy to point a finger at Paul Pogba, considering he gave away the first goal, but he did get his pocket picked again after that. And is this a problem, Kenny, sometimes, that Paul Pogba in possession leaves himself open to getting dispossessed quite a bit in dangerous positions when he is lying deep in midfield?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's a consistent flaw in his game, Owen. He looked a bit leggy last night to me early in the game. His body language, even a couple of camera angles up close, he was kind of blown a little bit. That looked to me as if just physically he just wasn't at the level that he needed to be. So, no, I don't see that as a consistent. In fact, he's one of the best on receiving the ball in those situations, even close to his penalty box. He's usually on the half turn. He's usually checking his shoulder, seeing the picture. His first touch is so good, his technique. Very rarely actually gets caught in possession of the ball in those areas. So I wouldn't be worried about that at all, in all honesty, Paul Pogba's point of view. And I don't think really there is any issues you've mentioned across the front line. It's a front five for me when I look at United. It's the front three, and it's Fernandes and Pogba as that front five. For me, the issues, and even last night we saw a hint of it again in terms of across United's defensive line. I thought they looked a little bit kind of fragile at times. I think that's the reason Southampton went with two up front last night. Lads, Hasenhüttl had a look and thought, if I can get a bit of speed, a bit of dynamism, a bit of penetration high up the pitch, I can get in behind that United defence, down the sides, and that bit of immobility, lack of athleticism, and Maguire, maybe kind of take advantage of that. So when I look at United going forward, I've no problems in terms of that front five. That's going to be as good as there is in the Premiership going forward. It's only going to get better. I'm just interested to see how Solskjaer sees it across that defensive line and that holding midfield position going forward, and where he feels he needs to strengthen. I think it was very interesting. He was asked a question a week ago about, is he going to buy a top-class centre-half? And he kind of laughed it off, I think, and said, well, I've got seven centre-halves. What are you talking about? But it doesn't matter how many. You could have 12 centre-halves at the football club. It doesn't matter. The question is, have you got a top-class pairing that you can put on the pitch when everybody's fit? And I still don't think United have. And that's going to continue to be a problem for him. I'm really interested to see if he looks to strengthen that area of the pitch in the summer. I think he has to.
They're pretty close to being very good, but there's definitely not enough strength and depth at the moment. Is that the issue, really, with last night? If Pogba's fatigued after playing this amount of games, after a very long layoff, in fairness, you know, comes back from injury and then there's a layoff, and I'm sure getting match fitness back was always going to be an issue for somebody who's been out for so long. Is it just about strength and depth, where they didn't have anybody who was good enough to be able to stick in there and just replace him and go at full pelt?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a problem strength and depth, because I think that in Fred and McTominay, they got players who can quite versatile players who can come into that central midfield area. Yeah, not of quality, different type of player to Pogba, obviously. And if you're looking to bring a player into the squad kind of like for like for Pogba, if you were to lose Pogba or Fernandes for a large chunk of kind of next season, and you're looking for somebody to come in and pick up the mantle and have as big an influence as those players, McTominay and Fred ain't going to do it. A different type of player. That's when you have to go and spend your money on a Jack Grealish and sit him on the bench for a fair chunk of the season, knowing that if one or two of those players gets injured, then you have a player of a similar kind of quality from a technical point of view to bring into the team. But further back down the pitch, for me, it's not a case of the people on the periphery of the squad are bulking up on the squad. It's actually in key areas of the pitch for me for Manchester United. And centre-half is one for me. I actually think that holding midfield one, still for me, I'm not 100% sure. Matic, for me, is a very experienced player, but he hasn't got the legs he had a couple of years ago. Just that position, that holding position behind Pogba and Hernandez. And when I think of centre-half and holding midfield position, it's a problem which actually not only Manchester United kind of have, it's a problem which Chelsea have. It's a problem with Arsenal have, even Spurs, in terms of they need real strength in the centre-half and even that holding midfield position, that holding midfielder lad with that kind of defensive mindset. You know, there's not too many of them around at the moment, certainly in the Premier League and at the top clubs, they're crying out for that type of player. Mm. And the obvious solution is probably out there, to be honest with you. And I look at Manchester United, the more I look at Manchester United, I think, right, a top-class centre-half, maybe who can also play in a holding midfield position, you know, of a certain technical level, who actually play and interact with Pogba and Fernandes on a similar level to them, can kind of play with him and combine with them. And for me, it's Declan Rice. Now, I know he's linked with Chelsea, and he's a great, he'd be a great signing for Chelsea, because Declan can play in a back four, he can play as a centre-half and a two, he can play in a three, centre or left side, and we know how effective he can be playing in the holding midfield position. We've seen it for West Ham over the past year and a half. And I look at Manchester United and I look at Declan Rice, and the more I look at him, I think he's the type of player for me in terms of his qualities and his versatility. He could drop in alongside Maguire. Maguire has to play. They spent the money now on Maguire, he's got to stay in the team. He wouldn't have, I would 85 million to spend. I wouldn't have been spending it on Maguire, the type of skill set that he has. But he's at the club now. He's going to play. It looks as if he's going to be captain material going forward. So you're going to have to get someone alongside him who can kind of complement him and obviously make up for those slight limitations in Maguire's game. And I look at I think Declan Rice, in terms of athleticism, speed over the ground, how competent he is on the ball, he could play alongside Maguire, and he would improve United, and he could also come in and play the holding midfield position behind Pogba and Fernandes. He's got the skill set, the kind of mobility to play in there as well. So I think I'm looking at Declan Rice, and he actually ticks a lot of the boxes for a lot of the top clubs this summer. Manchester United, Chelsea in particular, but also Spurs and Arsenal, I don't think they're going to get him. So again, I'm waiting to see who'll possibly jump and put big money on the table for Declan Rice, because that's the area for me, Manchester United and Chelsea in particular, who look to close that gap with Manchester City and Liverpool. That's the area where they're crying out for reinforcements, that kind of hold the midfield and central defensive position are absolutely key, that Liverpool have got nailed down. Manchester City do to an extent with Fernandinho and Rodrigo in the hold the midfield position. They need a centre-half as well, don't get me wrong. But for me, it's only a matter of time. I think the gloves will be off in the summer in terms of Declan Rice. If any clubs get a sense that West Ham will take money for him and Declan Rice is keen to make that move in the summer, I think Manchester United should be one of those teams putting serious money on the table to get him in the door.
Declan Rice wouldn't leave. He's always loyal to the cause. There's no chance he'd...
Rice and Grealish together at last.
It's amazing. It's a great show. But I think if the money to burn at Manchester United, the open checkbook, although United could bring money in, lads, get rid of a few of those centre halves, you get a lot of people off the wage bill, you get money in the bank, Boye, Jones, Small, and a lot of those players, you could get out the door, get money in. If you're two big chunks of money to spend in Manchester, if you're Manchester United manager, Declan Rice and Jack Grealish coming in the door in the summer, wow. To complement what you already have in that team, then for me, you're not far off then having a team you can put out and say, this team can now challenge for a Premiership title.
Just to torment Ireland fans about what might have been. On that note, Kenny, good stuff. Thanks a million.
Cheers, lads. Take care.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.